The Crude Life Media Network, the most trusted voice in energy.
All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. We have Joe Sinnott from the Marcellus Utica Appalachia Shale Play, specifically out of that Pittsburgh area. And how you doing today, Mr. Joe Sinnott, Whiting Partners and the host of the Energy Detox Podcast?
Doing all right, Jason. We're clicking along through summer here in Pittsburgh and, well, I guess anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. But things are well. Thank you very much.
You know, one of the things that I want to talk about today is just whether it be energy transition or transition into, I call it that back to school, where during the summer, everybody's kind of doing their own thing. Maybe they're doing a vacation. Maybe they're doing a backyard barbecue. Generally, there's kind of a chaotic planning time if you're any sort of social engineer person. But starting about, you know, at August 1st, I even saw on my calendar, they even called it Back to School Day, which I was a little bit disheartened because, boy, back to school in August? We haven't even hit the dog days of August yet, but you know as well as I do, Joe, when you start going to Walmart and Target and some of these other Costcos and see the back-to-school stuff after the 4th of July and Christmas after, Easter, and I'm sorry, Christmas after Halloween, your mind just starts going there. Your mind just starts going there. Talk to me about that transitional mind while your body is still in the present, if you will.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And I think, you know, in the world that I work in, and probably in most people's worlds, everything seems like a constant transition of some sort. And in many cases, you're trying to resist that transition. And I think certainly if you're a child, I think resisting the transition to go back to school is one such thing. But even as a parent, Jason, so, you know, beyond simply going into the store and seeing all the back to school stuff, heck, just this week, we're knee deep in back to school forms and medical forms. And oh, shoot, we need this thing. We got to call the doctor. Hey, we didn't know we needed a physical for this kid for the summer, you know, all these various things. And at some point, and I think for us, it might have been yesterday, actually, you know, it could either convince your mind or trick your mind or whatever that, shoot, you know, we're running out of time. We have all this stuff to do, even though, as you said, you know, we still got a month to go. You know, we're not even in August yet. But again, once you convince yourself that you're in the midst of this transition and things are moving full steam ahead, yeah, it starts to play with you a little bit. So I don't know if that's where you were going there, but at least, you know, just hearing you talk about the transition back to school, I know we are, as I said, knee deep in it here in the Sinnott household, and it's real, but you know, it's always a question of, well, how real is it? You know, do we really need to be in this, you know, hyper readiness mode with still whatever 4 or 5 weeks to go?
Well, it's interesting because in the world of oil and gas or the world of energy and the world of business, it happens all the time. Just this morning, I'm reading an article, the comments from Michael Reagan from the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, about the new $1.5 billion that they're going to spend with oil and gas companies for methane reduction. Well, there's going to be a whole new set of rules coming with that too. So this is very relevant in other industries, especially when you're going through a transitional time, because just when you get ready to get set in your laurels, well, look at that. Well, if we're going from soccer to basketball, we're going from football to whatever. We got to start deleting these emails and we got to add these email lists and we got to start figuring out practice ends at 6:30 instead of this. And we got to do this in the world of business, this government form instead of this government form. And we got to add this spreadsheet. We got to justify this with some pictures now because an insurance company is involved. Joe, am I just rambling or am I connecting a little bit?
No, I think you're not rambling. I think actually, Jason, you're articulating what goes on in most people's brains when they are faced with the type of transition you say. However, I think you're also giving a good example of how important it is sometimes to just slow down and have somebody say, okay, I understand there's a lot of change that might be coming, but, you know, again, you could be blunt and say, you know, might you be blowing it, you know, a bit out of proportion? Might you be overreacting a bit? Or probably more appropriately, and maybe this is more of a coaching question, you know, how much of a change will it really be? you know, at the end of the day, things tend to revert to the mean or whatever, right? So at the end of the day, if you're in a position, whether you're the head of an oil and gas company and you see these things on the horizon, or you're a leader, you know, maybe a couple rungs down, or you're just a, you know, an individual contributor, it's critical to avoid the temptation to get more excited and expend more energy than you need to thinking about how different everything is going to be, because odds are 90% of what you do on a day-to-day basis, again, whether it's leading people, developing people, you know, being safe, you know, operating efficiently, all of those things, by and large, no matter how many billions of dollars are infused into the industry to facilitate some sort of changes, again, most of what you do on a day-to-day basis likely isn't changing. And so you need to make sure that your energy is still devoted to those things. But again, human nature, like you said, shoot, we're changing seasons. Shoot, we're doing this. Well, guess what? You know, hey, you know, you brought up sports, Jason. Even if you're transitioning from, you know, soccer to baseball, or baseball to basketball, or whatever that, you know, whatever it is these days with all the indoor sports and everything, it seems like all the seasons are out of whack. But regardless, Jason, you still need to focus on, again, eating right, getting good sleep if you're an athlete, you know, staying fit, doing the basics. That doesn't change, even if the season changes and the practice changes and, you know, maybe some of the muscles you're using changes. So anyway, again, maybe I'm the one rambling on now, Jason, but no, you hit, clearly you hit a bit of a nerve there, because I deal with people who feel like they are constantly in transition for good reason. But so many of those people, Jason, fall into that trap of, hey, you know, the sky's falling, when in reality, yeah, there might be a couple of raindrops to dance around, but things are largely as they were pre-transition when you really dig into it.
One of the things that I've noticed about transition, or just trying to refixulate your mind. How about that? Refixulate. We're going to come up with a new word today, is that, you know, vacation, if you will. And whether it's a 5-minute vacation or a 1-week vacation, there is importance and there is value in both. For example, a 5-minute vacation, that's quick meditation break, and oftentimes get you, you know, refocused very quickly. The week vacation, or the 3-day vacation, that's a tough one. Because when you go on vacation, Joe, sometimes it takes you 2 days to wind down. And then all of a sudden it takes a day or two to get into vacation mode. And then it's time to go back. You haven't even had a vacation yet, because your body and mind is trying to get unrelaxed. And after being wound up for a year or 5 years, whatever it might be, it's difficult. Back when I was in publishing, we had mandatory vacations for 10 days. We would make employees go on 2 10-day vacations a year. So that way they could really just kick back and get things done and everything. And I found that interesting, you know, because it worked and it was an experiment. And we also did where if you traveled for more than 2 weeks in a month, you got free massages paid for by the company too, because driving and that sort of thing. So anyway, talk to me about the vacations and how, oh, you know, clearing your mind. Maybe it's reading a book. Have you read any books lately? I mentioned my publishing, for example.
Yeah, well, so a couple questions in there. I mean, one, I had actually been doing some traveling recently, so that gave me a chance to read a book, because I was traveling alone last week, so that really gave me a chance to do some reading. I finished The Art of Thinking Clearly by Rolf Dobelli. So an interesting book. Sort of relevant to some of these topics, because when it comes to vacation, Jason, it's easy to not think clearly. So again, maybe weaving back to your prior question, you know, we make a lot of excuses, right? Oh, I can't get away for 10 days. 7 days is it, right? I got all these other things at work. And, you know, excuse after excuse on why you can't build a, you know, I'll give you a personal example. You know, when my family and I, we go on vacation, again, it's tempting to fill it up with activities for the kids and everything, when we know that, one, building in some downtime in the middle of vacation is important for everybody. Two, sometimes that downtime actually winds up being the most important time. But three, it can be difficult if you're going away and you're paying for hotels and everything else to schedule time to basically do nothing. So it's critical to think clearly and, you know, challenge yourself and say, well, hey, you know, paying for a night of vacation, even if we're not going to whatever theme park or beach or whatever, you know, having that time to get away and having that downtime to relax and recharge, that's a huge investment. It's not a waste of money. It's not an inefficient use of your time away, you know, quite the opposite. So I think, again, taking that, you know, some of the stories we tell ourselves or excuses we make, you know, for not having a certain type of vacation or a long enough vacation, or in some cases, a short enough vacation, you know, those are the things that you need to, well, in many cases, challenge yourself on or have somebody to challenge you on, lest you find yourself in the typical, oh, vacation's exhausting, oh, I need 2 or 3 days to recover. Well, what if you had one day in the middle and then maybe you don't need as much recovery time and you can hit the ground running and you don't show up at work, you know, the day after vacation exhausted. So anyway, I mean, we can talk for hours about this concept, Jason, but the same excuses and stories we tell ourselves about building a vacation and navigating a vacation are the same things that happen day to day in our work, you know, in business transitions and transactions and all the various changes in the oil and gas industry. They're the same patterns, Jason. And, you know, the people that can break those patterns and think more clearly, by and large, are the ones that are going to have sustained success.
As a former publisher, was it a hard book or an ebook?
It was a hard book with a soft cover. So it was how about that?
Boy, makes me feel good. Hey, I got a question for you. Do you purge emails? Do you read emails? Where are you at with emails? Because that's a big part of transition, is getting rid of crap, purging, man.
Purging. I think the pre-vacation purge is, you know, bringing it back to vacation. I think that's just as important, right? You know, whittling things down and figuring out, you know, what do you need so that you're not carrying all this extra weight around literally and trying to move it from place to place. So anyway, what was your, emails. I'm a fan of purging. I think I'm typically slower than I should be to unsubscribe or filter or whatever, because again, we tell, you know, we always make excuses, right? Same thing. Hey, maybe I do need this email that gets sent once a week or once a day, or maybe this company that I've, you know, haven't bought anything from in 4 years, maybe they're going to send some special that entices me and that I need. Obviously, those are all ridiculous stories to tell yourself, and the best thing you could do is to eliminate them. And when you need to go buy something, or when you have a hankering to read some, you know, to dive into the news, there's no shortage of ways to go and hunt down that information. So why are you allowing these companies, these individuals to push stuff to you that, you know, there's maybe a less than 2% chance that you need, and probably, heck, there's probably less than a 2% chance that you've even opened any of some of those emails in the last 3 years. So anyway, again, a great question, because that's the type of stuff that, yeah, can help you not think clearly. And the need to purge is real for, I know, myself, my family, and probably most of the people that I encounter in my day-to-day life, Jason.
Well, next question I have is more of a, I'm not sure if it's an old man shouting at a cloud or if it's what it is, but it's an observation to start. But again, it might appear like I'm just someone shouting at a cloud or sitting at a bar stool complaining, but I do believe, and I just want your opinion on this, because you're a parent more than anything. You're also a professional, so I respect both sides of your opinion. But with my kids' school, I need a weekend to read those emails. These things are war and peace, man. I mean, we're talking, I can't believe how long they are. And I'm thinking, okay, are they trying to do like a magazine or a newspaper? Because there's things in these newsletters I didn't ask for, I don't need, I don't care about, you know, I mean, it just seems like they just keep adding and adding and adding. Like, it started out as a nice shell, but over the course of 5 to 10 years, it's turned into just something that you need. It's a full-time job sometimes to read my kids' school's newsletters. Do you have that issue at any part of your life where it just seems like they've just been adding and adding, and so it's overwhelming? Where almost it's analysis of paralysis, too much. Just, okay, got it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I certainly have that exact experience when it comes to schooling. And again, like I said, we're I think in the thick of it now, where you're getting all these emails, you're getting all these requests, all these things you need to do during the school year itself. Jason, as you said, it could be overwhelming, some of these super long emails. But what's interesting, going back to, you know, maybe some of the things you brought up at the beginning, it's interesting to watch the schools adapt over time and almost transition from, hey, we're going to try to consolidate as much communication as possible into, you know, just one weekly email versus, you know, sending stuff ad hoc. Well, but guess what? You know, when they were sending three reminders that, I don't know, you know, there's going to be pajama day at school, when they were sending those three reminders over and over again, hey, guess what? I was less likely to miss it. My wife was less likely to miss it. Whereas now when they're consolidating, again, if I'm not interested in reading War and Peace, now I'm more likely to miss it. So it's, you know, watching this ebb and flow, it's the same thing that happens in companies, right, Jason? You know, somebody gets an idea to be more efficient or more clear or, you know, get the message out there. And it seems good at first. There's a little bit of momentum. And then, hey, you know, you start seeing the downside. So you adapt. And it's these same patterns that seem to, you know, come through organizations or schools or families every couple years. And it's funny. It's the same cycle. It's the same ebb and flow. And again, do I have a magic solution for it? No. You asked me for my opinion. I don't know if that was an opinion. But, you know, certainly as a coach, it's, hey, acknowledge these cycles, lay out these cycles, and at least don't pretend like they don't exist, so that you don't find yourself going through the same cycles unconsciously or unwittingly and, you know, missing opportunities to find that solution that's maybe, you know, the best, I hate to use the word balance, but the best balance between the War and Peace school emails and the, you know, consolidated War and Peace emails, and then the four emails a day about every minute thing from lunch to close and pickup times and half days and snow days and everything else.
Can you coach me a little bit on professional jealousy?
Professional jealousy, huh? Well,
you know, I'll give you an example. Okay. First of all, I've got two confessions. One is earlier when I gave the example of transitioning, I used sports and I said soccer first for some reason. And I don't know what season soccer's in. So I couldn't transition into the next sport. So I just said basketball because I knew that was a winter sport. And I was a baseball and basketball and football and, you know, that kind of track and all that different stuff. So I didn't play soccer. I wasn't aware of it, you know. And then the other one is when I get these emails from the school, and I see them just adding and doing these other things. And I came from publishing, you know, I've worked in the media literally since I was 10 years old. When I was 10 years old, I was a newspaper carrier that had to go collect money for the newspaper. So I was in the distribution circulation department that I always joke, all those highly paid editors, writers, and publishers, they did all the work and then relied on us kids to go and bring it across the goal line, make sure that we were the ones that delivered it to the door. And then we had to go collect the money and everything. So I know the industry pretty well is what I'm trying to say. And so when I see some of these emails come and they ad hoc them and they kind of use it as their own little experiment. And one example is if they're doing a fundraiser. I know what marketing is. I know what frequency is. So when I see a school sending out 7 emails in 3 days trying to get money, well, boy, my school is spending time doing that. And they're using their established trust, which is, I just signed up for the lunch news. I just wanted to know if it was Sloppy Joe Day on Monday. Now, all of a sudden, I got 7 emails coming to me in 2 days because the drama kids need money. So you see what I mean? To where I have a little bit of professional jealousy that distribution gets used at organizations for just whatever people want at times, it seems. And the school is just kind of a loose example with that. But do you understand what I mean by that, Joe?
Well, I understand the scenario you're talking about. I guess from a jealousy standpoint, I mean, how does that?
Oh, it would take me 5 years to go get 250,000 followers that are active, whether it be through subscriptions of selling daily newspapers, or it would get people to sign up for emails. So that's what I'm saying, is that There's an established trust that people have with a government or a bank or even certain corporations to a certain degree. And so it's almost like a bait and switch in a way, you know, and I hate saying that term because I don't want to turn this into a completely cynical old man shouting at the end of the bars. But like I said, there's some professional jealousy there because I'll give you another example. The Bismarck Tribune is our state's largest newspaper. Mm-hmm. And another one is The Week. That is a magazine that I used to subscribe to. I bet I get 4 or 5 emails a day from them asking for subscriptions for $1. And that's because it's hard to get subscriptions. It's hard to get people that are actual users that, you know, are mm-hmm. verified, because anybody can like something, but somebody going to give you, you know, business, somebody going to give you time and energy. So it's interesting. Like I said, there's a professional jealousy there because I know it takes 3 to 5 years sometimes to get that amount of sales or that amount of distribution built. And when someone can just use it ad hoc, there's a lot of professional jealousy there. And so it's interesting because when you try to talk to some people in leadership, they don't understand it. And that bothers me too. So anyway, I didn't want to get too cynical here. It was more of the professional jealousy guy, Joe. I hope I didn't bore you too much with that example, but.
No, you didn't bore me. I mean, I think so. There's two angles there. You said, you know, coaching, you know, my mind goes to obvious examples of people that I work with who, you know, might not realize the power they have or the, how would you put it? You know, the email lists, if you will, that they have, and how they might be abusing it or how they might be underutilizing it, and how, yeah, you know, a lot of people don't have that luxury. And what that means, Jason, is when, you know, I mean, the simplest example is, you know, when somebody has, you know, maybe dozens or hundreds of people under them, you know, they don't realize that when they call a meeting, when they send an email, that, you know, again, I think they realize it to a certain extent, but they might not realize the full power they have, that they can reach out at any given time to this large group of people. And those people, by and large, are going to listen. They're going to see it. A huge percentage of it are, you know, actually they might even be inclined to take some action because of this individual. And again, it seems so simple, Jason, but when you put it in those terms and say, look, you have something that your average person, your average Jason out there, doesn't have, even within the company. And then that segues into, all right, well, you know, are we using it as effectively as possible? And, you know, are we communicating with the right frequency, or, you know, with the right level of detail, or even the right structure in some cases? So, I mean, that from a business standpoint, Jason, I mean, that is a common theme that I work on with individuals. You know, when it comes to even within an organization, again, we'll transition to you, Jason, you know, within an organization, when people feel like they don't have that visibility, you know, they don't have that audience, you know, the type of audience that, again, you would love to have to send out a, maybe not a fundraising email like your kid's school, but, you know, at the same time, right? I mean, yeah, that's, you know, that's a power that in some circumstances is kind of just handed on, and in other circumstances takes years to develop. But for an individual who is sitting there jealous because they don't have that reach, the first question is, well, all right, you probably don't need to reach 250,000 people or whatever. You know, what is the message that you want to get out there? And most importantly, who is your audience? Let's start there instead of just playing the statistics of, again, using your example, Jason, if you have this, you know, couple hundred thousand person audience, or maybe, you know, couple thousand person audience in case of a school, you know, what percentage of people are really paying attention and taking action unless they're bombarded 10 times a day? Because that's likely not what the individual, a potentially jealous person or professionally jealous person in an organization wants. What he or she wants is, you know, a message to get out there for a little bit of visibility and for, you know, 2 or 3 people probably to pay attention and listen to what they have to say. So that's the first thing, Jason, is, all right, so what? Who is your audience? Is there a more effective way to get to your target audience instead of just blanketing them from a traditional marketing standpoint and hoping that, you know, you get a handful of clicks? So again, I'm kind of gravitating into your territory when it comes, I think, to, you know, to marketing and the world that you've been in for decades. But internally, Jason, that's the line of questioning. And that's the, you know, that's how I help people think more clearly when it comes to, all right, instead of being there jealous, what do you really want? What do you really need to do?
Well, and where I'll tell you kind of the scenario where it came about, because it really talks about what we talked about. And then what I think the next conversation is really. So there was a group of us parents and somebody was just kind of mentioning about how I think it was the drama club that was looking for some fundraising or something along those lines. And some grant didn't come through, or I can't remember, but it was, you know, the kids need shoes. You know, this is over dramatic and that sort of thing. And so the frequency is what caught my attention. But one of the mothers was just kind of complaining because, well, her kid, I think he wrestles or plays hockey, one of the programs that just doesn't get a lot of attention. So now they want to use that email base. And so, I mean, you see what I mean? To where now all of a sudden some people are starting to say, whoa, this isn't fair. And if you're the employee, you're supposed to actually know better with policies and you're supposed to know better because these are the types of things that come up. Now you get parents that say, well, our kids are having a garage sale for new uniforms. Why aren't you putting that in the email? And then all of a sudden now you have five different administrators that have to have a meeting, and how much resource and time is being wasted on that. So to me, that's the one angle. The other one is that the other people really didn't know because they stopped reading the school's emails because there was just too many of them. So what ended up happening is the one mother was pretty much on the PTA. So she was a decision maker, and the other people were just busy. They were working two jobs or, you know, they're just normal people. And I thought, oh, this is really interesting now. So we've gotten to the point where we've saturated our own market so much that the average person isn't paying attention. So when abuse happens, you can't see that. So the conversation just turned into trust. Like, what can we trust from our school anymore? Do we even want to open the email? Like, because so-and-so's mother works on the administrator. So that's why they got the drama stuff. And you see what I mean? It turns into a drama. So yeah. Anyway, a lot to unpack there that basically it comes down to when you don't follow a lot of the procedures that were set up originally, because whether you don't know, it creates a lot of unnecessary work. It doesn't become very sustainable. And at the end of the day, what we're talking about is trust, Joe.
Yeah. And within an organization, Jason, the thing that I see, and this is all industries, but I think oil and gas is as good of an example as any, is that trust seems to fade when the gap between the written rules and the unwritten rules widens. So what you just shared, right? There's definitely written rules about communication and, you know, using directories and lists. There's no question that, you know, your school or school district has some rules around it. And there's also no question, it sounds like, that, you know, those rules are being flouted. And that's when trust starts to erode. That's when people say nothing matters. And it's up to a leader. And again, it's not always easy, of course, but it's up to a leader to step in and say, all right, what are the rules? What are the written rules? Nobody can argue with that. Whether the rules make sense or not, that's a different animal. What is our starting point and how have we deviated from those? That is as, you know, unemotional, you know, non-political as you can get, right? What's in place and how have we deviated? But again, you know, again, I'm in the energy industry. My focus is energy. I host a podcast called The Energy Detox. A lot of energy is expended when leaders are afraid to take that approach and instead try to dance and spend some time bridging gaps, you know, bridging those gaps between the written and the unwritten rules. That is a lot of energy, Jason, and very few people are able to do that successfully, because once you start dancing and trying to bridge that gap, like I said, Trust goes away. That was great. That is the perfect word you brought up there, Jason. Trust. And it's not just trust of, you know, obviously whether the data in the email is correct or not. There's no, you know, we're going to assume that, you know, everything is factually correct. But it's trust of, hey, what are the biases in there? You know, why is this person harassing me more? Why are they violating the rules? Why do they find it necessary to abuse the directory? And then, what's the next logical conclusion? I don't care. I'm not going to read it. And now there's even more wasted energy on, you know, every side of the equation. So yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Jason. I mean, we can talk about specific examples that I see from a coaching standpoint, but that is a ubiquitous problem. And sometimes, many times, it's ones that leaders, they don't really, obviously, I'm telling leaders to go ahead and step in and solve the problem. But obviously, the first thing is, you know, are they even aware that this is going on within the organization?
I got a question for you, because, you know, one of the issues that I've had with the oil and gas industry is dealing with a lot of the leadership is just trying to get them to see the public relations issue that's happening. And, you know, the methane part and all these other things. But I think a lot of it has to do with whether it be trust or just transparency and some of those things. And talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you see that could help the industry leadership right now, because just, you know, this morning I pulled up some news and here's been the week, and this is why I bring it up. Let me give you a little context, Joe, here, because I don't want to seem like I'm bashing on the industry, but it's one of those things where when you've been trying to educate and you've been talking to a brick wall, and then all of a sudden those same people come back and try to educate you on it, it's like, okay, I'm not really sure we're connecting here. But I had a few calls this week that they were service companies, and the HR departments were trying to get the ownership to go a different direction away from oil and gas because of some of the new, just whatever HR stuff is. And so that was an interesting dynamic, because now it's like they're trying to go through the HR side of things, whether it be through ESG or whatever the new acronym will be for ESG. But also we had a oil company that reached out and was picking our brains a little bit on some of the public relations things too. And I told them, trust is the new commodity. I said, trust is the new commodity. I said, it's an intangible commodity, and it's public relations has always profited and made its money off of intangible commodities, whether it be exposure or trust or, you know, sizzle. Short-term gain equals long-term pain doesn't seem to work, but that is a way, you know, it's a quick sale, going out of business sales, you know, that type of thing. So, you coach a lot with the energy industry. So where are you seeing leadership taking the industry? And what do you see when I say the words, trust is a commodity now?
Well, I agree. I'm sitting here thinking as you talk, and yeah, I'm pride myself on being able to play devil's advocate, Jason, but yeah, I mean, I'm failing to poke arguments in your claims that, yeah, trust is a commodity, and an important commodity, albeit an intangible commodity. When it comes to, you know, when it comes to leadership's role in building trust with the community, because you just mentioned that, right? You know, the outside opinions of oil and gas, the outside trust or distrust of oil and gas, you know, I see a pretty broad spectrum of leaders out there in the industry right now, on the operator side, on the service side, midstream side. And, you know, some I think are going through the motions, quite frankly, and, you know, they're content with the standard talking points that, you know, try to rebut some of the arguments, some of the entities out there that don't have trust in the industry. And obviously, you know, you're not going to change their mind with talking points. So I think from a leadership standpoint, both from an internal personnel standpoint, so again, you mentioned human resources, I think it starts, Jason, with moving away from talking points that people are going to dismiss, that people are not going to trust, and moving towards more of this coaching approach where you're asking questions. You're getting your audience talking about what they want long-term, you know, what they want. They want stability, right? They want clean air. They want to know there's a future for, you know, their families and for their children. They want to know that we're doing everything we can do to protect the earth. And certainly if you're here in the West, in the United States, you know, sort of protect our way of life, right? Know that prosperity is going to continue and be a real achievable thing. That's what people want. But you need them to be saying it in their own words so that you can reframe your, you know, talking points, if you will, and put it in the words of your audience. That's what effective leaders do, Jason. And in the oil and gas industry, as cliche as it sounds, the leadership that's out there, or particularly those who are in community affairs and government relations and all of this, you know, if they're truly amassing what their constituents, what their stakeholders want in their own words, and not short-sighted, we want you to stop drilling for oil and natural gas and shut down your operations. I mean, I'm talking, hey, what do people want? Again, they want reliable energy, right? They want clean energy, all the things that are in the, you know, the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, right? People want the same darn things. So why aren't leaders getting the words and the thoughts and the desires of their stakeholders and turning those into talking points instead of assuming what their audiences want from an environmental standpoint, from an environmental justice standpoint? You know, one of the biggest mistakes that I see, and quite frankly, I wasn't looking for it until a couple months ago when I was at a conference and I heard somebody speak on this. But one of the biggest mistakes I see now in leaders and companies in general is that they go into communities and they assume what their stakeholders want. That is a major flaw, Jason. Those stakeholders might not give a hoot about your talking points regarding jobs and the economy, as important as that is. Obviously, I'm on board with all that. You know what they want sometimes? A grocery store, right? So put all your eggs in that basket, use their words and tie back to how the oil and gas industry, you know, from a micro level, you know, within a community, or certainly from a macro level, supports their need for affordable, accessible groceries. And again, maybe I'm off on a tangent here, Jason, but again, I think, you know, you maybe struck another nerve on this conversation thread, but that's what builds trust. If I hear you talk, and I repeat back to you something I heard, you know, not from a gimmicky standpoint, but I demonstrate that I heard you and now I'm working towards that. And here's how I have been working towards it and how I can do that better. That builds trust, Jason, not just pushing out talking points to you and just sending more and more information, in some cases more and more money. Sending money to people doesn't build trust. So anyway, lest I continue on my soapbox here.
I was going to let you finish and everything, because I have a very good example that I think you might understand or relate to. And have you seen that new Michael Jordan movie called Air with Matt Damon?
No, I have not.
So it's available on Amazon Prime, and it's free for Amazon Prime members. And I would invite everybody in the oil and gas industry to watch this, because it shows leadership. Because remember, are you getting a leadership award or a followership award? Anybody can just take orders and do that, but who can be a leader? What Matt Damon did was actually change the industry. So he was a guy that went around and scouted people for shoe contracts. And he ended up wanting Michael Jordan. And it's interesting because they go through the draft picks and go through each different person and talk about, you know, Adidas was the number one brand and everybody wanted to go to Adidas. And Nike was just kind of more for, I think, running shoes is where they made their money at the time. And the movie is about Michael Jordan's mother. Michael, you don't actually see his face in the entire movie. It's just, he doesn't talk until the very end. I think he has the last line in the movie, but outside of that, because it's not about him. But the movie shows how when you listen, you can advance ideas. If you're just going through the motions, if you're just using a formula that someone else uses in work, so you're doing a formulaic method of this business, well, then you're going to keep chunking out the same. Garbage in, garbage out. In the beginning, it was great. But eventually, the good stuff does composition down and becomes garbage. And that's when you need new ideas. And we can go back to the aqueducts if you need examples. There's new ideas that come along and they rejuvenate a marketplace. And the idea that came through the movie Air essentially was, a merchandise license contract for Michael Jordan. Before then, the athletes didn't have them. They just got a flat market fee, and the shoe company made millions. But what happened was, is leadership came through, and the reason leadership came through is because it empowered others. Good leaders empower, and that takes trust. And in the movie, Michael Jordan's mother said back to the Nike executive, "My son is going to be wearing the shoes that you're going to be selling. If my son doesn't produce, you don't produce." It's a two-way trust street. Mm-hmm. And that's the other part of trust, is that it has to be a two-way street. Otherwise, it just becomes a dictatorship, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't prepared for this much speaking, Joe. So anyway, talk to me a little bit about that, you know, the disruption and trust, and how leaders, sometimes you have to communicate with your bosses, almost not in an adversarial way, even though it might seem that, but you have to have a trust with your own internal leadership in order for a leader to really empower others. Am I making sense, Joe?
Yeah, you made a lot of sense. And I don't know how much I really need to add on to that, Jason, other than to say, I think at the end, what you hit on was the importance of communicating upwards. And I think you and I have talked in the past about, you know, how a good chunk of the time that I spend working with individuals in the oil and gas industry is spent on managing up. And a lot of that is, it's all communication, and it's finding, you know, the most effective ways to communicate, especially in circumstances where the trust isn't already there. And that's not easy. Which again speaks to the importance of people who are already up, if you will, you know, senior leaders, you know, making sure that they have those forums and those pathways, those aqueducts, if you will, so that information can flow to them. And many leaders I work with, Jason, they think that those pathways, those aqueducts, those channels are in place, and optically, you know, on paper, they might be there, but this is why we're talking about, you know, the intangibility, as you said earlier, of trust. If the trust isn't there and people don't want to use those channels, or they're afraid to use those channels for some reason, that's disastrous. And again, when I go into an organization, that's one of the areas of, ignorance is maybe a strong word, but we'll use it. Ignorance. You know, it's ignorance of senior managers who, again, think that everything is structured fine, but they don't realize that people are afraid to use those structures in the way that, you know, they're intended to be used. And it comes down to trust. And then again, the next level there, Jason, of course, is, well, why is that? And what can we do to shift that? And some of that comes back to what we talked about earlier, which is, you know, understanding what your stakeholders, what your constituents, what your employees, you know, actually need from you as a leader. And actually, you know what, let me add one more thing. And now that I'm, again, you know, we get going to these conversations, we never know where we're going to go. But, you know, I've had some recent conversations with people, you know, stakeholder type conversations. And, you know, one question that I often ask of stakeholders, so in other words, you know, people that are stakeholders of an individual that I'm coaching, right? I mean, they could be peers, they could be superiors, they could be contractors, customers, employees, whatever. But one of the questions I often ask is, all right, you know, what else would you want from this individual? You know, what ideally, you know, again, it doesn't matter what you say to me, you know, what would you want from this person? And it's amazing how many individuals really don't have a quick answer there. You know, they think through it, and typically there's a really good answer or several answers on the back end. But, you know, the leaders need to be asking that question regularly and not assuming that they're already delivering what their employees need. Again, it sounds so simple, if not cliche, Jason, but I'm amazed still in my role as a coach when I ask that question, that, you know, it gets people dreaming and thinking, and there's a lot of things that they have not articulated to, you know, the person that they need to share these thoughts and desires with. So again, I don't know where we are in this conversation, but it definitely is all under the umbrella of trust, Jason, and asking the right questions and understanding what your audience wants. And
you just brought it full circle, because we started basically about how do you get into a new routine. I could have said, how do you get off one merry-go-round and into another merry-go-round, or How do you go from one roller coaster to another? In my world, the roller coaster is the merry-go-round. It just has more turns and flips, so you don't realize you're on a merry-go-round. But at the end of the day, you know that rat race started, I think, as a rat race, because apparently rats must chase each other in circles. I'm not even sure, but that's what we started with, is, you know, transitioning from one routine to another. And what we're doing as an industry is the same thing with this energy transition. So it's interesting that we've come full circle on that. How's business, by the way, Joe? Everything going okay? Are you looking for new clients? Are you full or what?
Yeah. Well, speaking of transitions, that was an abrupt transition.
I was going to ask you, and that's, you know, kind of, I wanted to just hammer home that we've come full circle, and, you know, and what are we all doing here? Everybody works. I mean, whether you're keeping a house or you're not, I mean, I'm sure you could help out a homemaker. Is a homemaker, that's unisex, right? Because I know a lot of stay-at-home dads. I was a stay-at-home dad and I worked full-time, but I was the stay-at-home dad. So I could have a coach come over and help me, but anyway, are you looking for, I'm not saying you're looking for that kind of work, but,
I mean, the short answer is yes. And again, this is a conversation I was having with my wife yesterday, how it is a full-time job, just managing, you know, the paperwork and the phone calls, like I said, to the doctors and all this other stuff, just to, you know, just to get your kids, you know, safely enrolled in school for the following year, let alone layering on camps and activities and, you know, everything else that's going on. So the short answer is, yes, I think homemaker is still an acceptable term. Yes, homemakers can use coaching as well. And, you know, while a lot of my pro bono coaching is directed towards that, again, it's real. It's getting out of, it's, you know, thinking clearly. It's, you know, trying to be more efficient. It's getting rid of your, you know, the stories you're telling yourself about the things you need to do, and trying to push those aside, whether they're related to, again, budgets or schedules or, you know, what you're serving your kids for dinner. Again, so many stories that parents, working parents, stay-at-home parents, whatever, so many stories that parents tell themselves that are really not necessary, Jason, right? I need my kids need to have a salad for dinner. Well, guess what? No, tell you what, if what's best for the family today might be McDonald's. I mean, that's it. But if you get into this trap where I'm never going to feed my kid McDonald's, and again, we can talk about health a different time, you know, that, what do they call it? A limiting belief, right? Or whatever you want to call it. Somebody needs to be there sometimes to just say, hold on, why? Why does it matter? Who says you need to do X, Y, or Z? And that same line of questioning, Jason, applies equally to your home life, your personal life, and to your professional life. As far as the professional life, so, you know, my day job and, you know, where I actually generate revenue to pay the bills, to send the kids to camp and school and have vacations. Things are clicking along. A lot of planning looking ahead to 2024. So certainly for individuals and companies that are out there looking to help their people think more clearly, looking to help their leaders build some of that trust that you were talking about, always welcome conversations about the most effective way to do that. And quite frankly, Jason, I love talking about all of the different leadership development resources that are out there and available to our industry. Obviously, I like distinguishing my own unique blend of oil and gas focused coaching resources and resources that are built on experience and technical expertise and all of the corporate fun that is married now to my world as a professional coach. So again, I like having those conversations, if for no other reason than to help individuals, especially those in human resources departments that are inundated with all kinds of options. Again, I like having conversations about, you know, what they're currently doing and what they're employing and, you know, what they're looking to accomplish, what results they're looking to accomplish, and then you back into the resources that make the most sense. So again, fortunately, things are clicking along, but always happy to have those conversations with folks and always enjoy conversations with you, of course, here on The Crude Life.
You got time for one more pop quiz one?
Oh, I always got time for you, Jason.
This one, I believe, is really very relevant with timing. So a lot of times what you and I will talk about transcends time, and your advice, I believe, will transcend time, but I believe my example may not so much. And it might, but it might in other areas. So do you have a workforce issue out in your neck of the woods?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Okay. Yep. So we've got a workforce issue here. There's a workforce issue down in the state of Texas. Colorado has one. Wyoming has one. It just seems like America in every state has a workforce issue, right? And so there's a lot of people trying to solve that problem. And I've gotten at least 15 phone calls from, it doesn't matter what company it is, an oil company or a service company or a healthcare company, really. They reached out to, and honestly, a healthcare company reached out to me because of the crude life with the oil and gas. They wanted to just find out about ethical energy, basically. And what some of the HR department has brought to the attention of some people in management is that, you know, basically that we need to, what is the word? Be competitive in hiring. Be competitive for hiring. And my question every time to the person who was trying to communicate with their HR department, who was getting, you know, information given to them from workforce people, I asked them, I said, well, how many applicants have said this, have said that thing, you know, that they will never work for an oil and gas company or they won't do business with anybody who does business with an oil and gas company? Because that was some of the comments. How do you battle? Because to me, that's talking points. I said, well, in the media, we call those talking points, that you give somebody quick things to say and it starts the process. And then you fold in and layer in with new kinds of, you know, inundation of different mediums and that sort of thing. So how internally, whether it's coming from sales and business development, you know, with excuses and that why things aren't working in the marketplace or observations or HR departments or even the boss watching the news. Sometimes the boss is the worst with the talking points, comes in, you know, I just saw the news and we're going to do this now. So I don't want to necessarily pick on HR, but that's where the recent timing has come up through the human resources departments via workforce development. And I found that an interesting way to shape the economy. And that's how I looked at it. And I don't necessarily want anybody else to look at it that way. I'm talking to you more from a soundbite coach management, if you will, because that's the hardest thing going right now, man. Whether you're in HR or the boss, you're getting inundated with soundbites. Jeez, the gas pump gives me gas. Steve Harvey's giving me soundbites at the gas pump. So anyway, sorry. I went a little long with that question.
No. Oh, was there a question in there, Jason? I don't know if I had. No, I'm just kidding. So I think, I mean, are you asking?
The soundbite management, because, you know, it's hard to really have conversations with people who only know 20% of the truth, or not even the truth, 20% of a context. Just start there. Just there. 20, you know, you have people coming in that are in leadership roles and they're doing the right thing by bringing it in. And I don't know if it's almost that it's too quick or I'm not sure what it is, but it just seems like that soundbite, you know, we've mentioned that word a few times. So that's why I keep going back to it. Cause that's what I called it too. When they brought that up where, you know, like one company, for example, like you said, several actually, where their human resources was concerned about doing business with the oil and gas sector. Mm-hmm. And they're like, and you know what their people would say things along the lines of is like, why we're trying to help, you know, like we're just trying to make them better. So why would that be a negative? I found that an interesting answer too, but I'm thinking more just the management of the soundbite communication, because a lot of times it seems like you've got groups that are trying to out soundbite each other or something. I don't know. It's so much time is devoted to it.
Got it. So I think, and I don't know if this will answer your question or not, Jason, but, you know, talking about soundbites, talking about some of the internal and external conversations and use of soundbites, I think one of the most effective methods of turning those sound bites into things that might actually resonate with people or might actually carry more weight and trust and meaning is having a third party to play devil's advocate. And basically, yeah. here's my idea for LinkedIn, you know, throw up a, you know, have an automatic nausea emoji. No, you can always paste one in, but it's almost like instead of the like button or the laugh button or the heart button or the support button or what's the other one? Celebrate button. It's almost like, you know, you want to throw up the, you know, the little nausea button of somebody vomiting, you know, when you hear one of those sound bites that just does not add value. So the question is, who in your organization has the authority to do that? Because, you know, if you've got a multi-billion dollar organization and you've got a sizable human resources department, and again, I work with companies, the human resources departments go from ridiculously spread thin and underfunded to, we'll just say, you know, go to the other direction, you know, so as, regardless of where you are, if you're the head of that company and you're, you know, these people are doing their best or they're doing what they're paid to do, you know, you're not going to be the one throwing up vomit emojis necessarily, but who in your organization is saying, hey, look, this doesn't serve us. This doesn't make sense. To your point, you know, if we're running away from oil and gas, how does that actually serve the people that, you know, we're there to support, the human beings on this planet? How does running away from oil and gas actually, you know, help human beings thrive and flourish? It doesn't. And to have an independent voice, and again, this, you know, that's not my primary job, of course, Jason, but when I'm in organizations and I'm working with individuals on messaging, on marketing, again, I work very closely with a lot of human resources departments. The good thing is I'm able to throw up gently and tactfully that vomit emoji. And so when, you know, for example, you talk about hiring, you know, issues, you know, when it doesn't seem like a company's messaging and marketing and targeting is, you know, getting anywhere, or certainly is no different from their competitors, it's a simple question for me to say, okay, what's your, you know, what is your short-term hook and what is your long-term hook for employees in real terms? Because if it's, hey, short-term, you're going to like the work you do, you're going to like this environment, you're going to like this culture, because again, if you're a human resources person, say the people that I engage with day to day like what they do in the short term, right now, on day one, out of the gate. And oh, by the way, long term, we believe here at our company that if you spend 5 years with us, especially early on in your career, you are going to earn $1.5 million more dollars over the next 20, 30 years than you would at some other company. We firmly believe that. Is there a little bit of arm waving? Sure. But we've tried to do that math because that's how strongly we believe in the value of being here at this company long-term for you. So short-term, long-term, you're not going to find, you know, our balance anywhere else. Now, that might not be true at the company you work for, and that's a whole different animal, but, you know, you speak in those terms to somebody, you don't have to, again, there's no talking points. I mean, even the word culture can get a little fluffy. So you just, short-term, long-term, this is what we do. It's not vomit-inducing, Jason. It's real. It tugs at what people want, whether they articulate it or not. And if you're from a human resources standpoint or talent development standpoint or talent acquisition, recruiting standpoint, if you can actually speak that honestly and in a way that doesn't, again, doesn't defy the trust that we talked about earlier, you are going to be so far ahead of your competitors, you know, that, again, you could spend all kinds of money on third parties and messaging and everything else. Having that human-based conversation, that's gonna do you wonders. So anyway, I don't know, did that even answer your question, or did you just give me a chance yet again to just,
you know, honestly, you did. And to me, it made the most sense just bringing in a third party, you know, just a moderator, arbitrator, somebody that can, you know, see the both sides, because, you know, I obviously that's what you do for a living, or can do for a living. That's part of what you do. And so it's a great solution to that problem. We call that, I think, a set and a spike in volleyball. But it's needed right now. To me, that's the number one issue is communication. How do we move forward on these things? And organizations like yours are solving problems. And you know, there's time for shameless plugs and there's time for real plugs. And this is a time for one of those real plugs. So how can people get in touch with you and you know, ask you if you're qualified to tackle their problem that exists, because we can't have this many workforce issues and have $10 trillion pumped in the economy in the last 3 years without something, without a communication problem. That's a lot of money to be circulating around for workforce issues to happen. So people need help, Joe. And how can you help them?
Yeah, well, as far as how I can help, I think it comes down to a lot of what we talked about, right? It's helping them think more clearly, helping them think more innovatively, and in many cases, helping them have a third party that's not complicated, that's straightforward. I think you can tell from these conversations, you know, you're going to get that mix of reality. And you know, if I need to put on my technical hat and think in ones and zeros, we can do that. But by and large, challenging what you're already doing to solve problems that have probably been occurring at your organization for years, you know, that's what I do. And so for, you know, oil and gas companies in particular, who have a unique set of challenges, Jason, when it comes to talent, when it comes to leadership styles, when it comes to volatility, you know, if you're in that world, then yeah, reach out. If nothing else, like I said earlier, I like discussing the, you know, different types of problems that different organizations have, and discussing all the different ways that companies have tried to tackle them so far, and, you know, and some ways that they think they'd like to go forward in terms of tackling those problems. And a big chunk of that is the type of coaching and leadership development services that I offer. So that being said, Jason, if people want to reach out, the easiest way is good old wittingpartners.com, WITTING partners. Always happy to connect on LinkedIn, of course, and any other means of conversation that people want to kick things off with. So I don't know. That being said, Jason, yeah, always happy to have those conversations and help folks out, particularly in this industry, however I can.
The Crude Life Media Network, the most trusted voice in energy.